Golf Today.
It's Wednesday and it's Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Ryan Lavender. A lot happening in the professional game. There was a packed meeting last night at Torrey Pines. The commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, expected to address the media in moments. What are your expectations in this potentially newsy Wednesday?
I don't think we're going to see anything groundbreaking or earth-shattering from Commissioner Jay Monahan. Keep in mind, this is still an active negotiation in the PGA Tour and the Saudi Public Investment Fund. It is now in the hands of the Department of Justice. So I do expect that Monahan's going to be pretty careful with some of his verbiage. I also have like a working theory, Damon, that if it's a scrum with reporters, that's to like fill in storytelling gaps and answer some questions, maybe show some face. And a press conference is where you make announcements. So I am anticipating the former as it comes to that, but it's still going to be very interesting to see what the commissioner has to say.
Look into your crystal ball. Is this the last year where we're going to be talking about this fracture in the game? Or will this follow us into 2026? Or does your reporting tell you that we're closer to the end than the beginning?
God, I hope so. I mean, I certainly hope it's going to be the end of the fracturing. LIV is still going to exist in some form or fashion. So we're still going to be having divided talent. The question is whether by the start of 2026, we can get to a point where there's some cross-pollination between PGA Tour players and LIV players, thus making both tours a little bit stronger.
All right. Unclear if there will be news on this Wednesday. One thing we do know, slow play continues to be a huge topic on the PGA Tour. Recently on his PGA Tour Sirius XM radio show, Lucas Glover, major champ, offered several solutions to help speed up rounds, including getting rid of aim point, which involves players using both their feet to feel the slope of the green and then using their fingers and eyes to determine what line to start the putt on. Here's what he said in case you missed it.
Aim point, statistically, hasn't helped anybody make more putts since its inception on the PGA Tour. Statistics have bared that out. It's also kind of rude to be up near the hole, stomping around, figuring out where the break is in your feet. It needs to be banned. It takes forever.
Then on Tuesday at the Genesis Invitational, Colin Morikawa, who uses aim point, was asked about Glover's comments. He responded and made a little comment directed at Lucas Glover's putter of choice, the broomstick. Take a listen.
Yeah, I have nothing against Lucas, but I mean, if we're banning aim point, I think we should ban long putters as well. And I don't know. I guess no one has said it, right? But like, let's just look. Aim point does take longer if you're not doing it properly, right? If you're not doing it when other players are doing, when other players are reading their putts. I think there's a respect issue. I think some players might get a little bit too close to the hole, and I get that when you get too close to the hole when someone else is putting. Yeah, like I don't want my line and my putt to go over someone else's foot and their marks. But, I mean, are you going to tell other players not to walk around the hole when we're picking up putts? So from my perspective, aim point has 1,000% helped me. You know, I listen to the announcers sometimes during play and they say, why would you aim point this, this and that? It gets a basis of how I read a putt and where I start my lines. It's just like reading something from behind the hole or behind the ball. That's how I'm getting my general read for that. So I don't think people understand how aim point works to really say this is right or wrong. Does it slow down play? I think there are some players that maybe do it in the wrong spots. And sometimes, look, I'll admit it. Yeah, maybe I can't get in when I want to. So it adds a couple more seconds. But I know that and I'm aware of that. I think players need to be aware if they're slow or not, right? Like let people know who is slow and do something about it, right?
What's your beef with a long putter?
Well, I mean, I'm just throwing shade back at, you know, my aim point guys. I'm protecting my aim point guys, right? And there's guys that long putt and aim point. No, I don't have any beef. I don't have anything wrong with putting. I just had to throw. I had to protect my aim point guys.
It doesn't do anything with pace of play, though.
What the long putter? No. But I mean, you know, there's some type of anchoring with like. It's different.
That was kind of fun. A little messy with this aim point versus long putter. Isn't this just all boiled down to pace of play? And maybe it's an optic thing as well. You're seeing guys kind of marching around the hole or on the LPGA Tour, the ladies that use aim point. You got to you know, doing a little of this and a little of that, and everyone's like, you know, get on with it already.
Yeah, I mean, optically, it's certainly not great, particularly when you're in this era where, you know, you want to speed up the game. There's changing viewing habits. Everyone wants to sort of modernize the game. I think the main point here is Aimpoint would be really difficult to ban, just as it would be really tricky to implement a shot clock as well, because when and where it's starting is sort of open to interpretation. That gets a little bit messy. But I think the larger point that Colin Morikawa is trying to make, and is something that PGA Tour officials told me a couple weeks ago at Pebble Beach, and that fans are telling them in the fan survey that they conducted last year, that they want the PGA Tour to be more transparent and to hold players more accountable. And so you have this average stroke time on the PGA Tour. It's publicly available to the players, at least, but not to the general public. And so whether you can make that public, whether you can start naming and shaming players, whether you're docking them strokes, whether you're docking them FedEx Cup points, that's the sort of behavior change that the PGA Tour is thinking about making at large. And I think, you know, look, you used to cover the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, personal conduct penalties, late hits, any sort of fine is made public. That really helps with the public's understanding. It helps with transparency, accountability, and I think that can sort of engender some more goodwill between fans and the PGA Tour.
I did cover the NFL. You know what the NFL has? Is a play clock. In baseball has a pitch clock. In tennis has a serve clock. In TGL has a shot clock. Doesn't this boil down to the fact, Brian, that we're marching closer and ever closer to the time where people are going to want and maybe, dare I say, demand a quicker, faster PGA Tour?
Yeah, the implementation would be very tricky. I don't think it's a problem for tee shots and approach shots. Certainly, if there's a wind gust or a really tricky hole location, that might take 5 to 10 extra seconds. Where it really boils down to is on the putting greens. And if you've watched any TGL action over the past month and a half, you have not seen a lot of putts made. It's because players are hurrying to get their routine in under 40 seconds.
Is that what you think? It's not because it's a different surface that they're putting
on. I think there's something that, I think 40 seconds is really quick on the putting greens. I also think there's something to be said, Damon, for taking your time reading putts. Obviously, you don't want to do so egregiously. But think about the drama of Tiger Woods stalking a putt, the anticipation. Ooh. Will he make it? Look at the steely determination that he has. I even go back to last week at the WM Phoenix Open, Luke Clanton's pursuit of a made cut and trying to get his PGA Tour card that way. He took 90 seconds, Luke Clanton did, to stroke his final putt on the 18th green. If he was rushing to try to get into the shot clock, something's lost. So I think, you know, competitively, there's, you know, drama that can be built up on the putting green. Do you want to do it for 2.5 minutes? Is it a competitive disadvantage or advantage to take your time? Yes, it needs to be within reason. But I don't want to see sort of the action, the competition compromised just because you're trying to get it inside this artificial number.
What about, I was going to give you an artificial number. I was about to give you a 75 seconds or a 60 seconds. Maybe 40 is too fast. Maybe it's perfect for a simulator TGL. But maybe out on the green grass of the PGA Tour, 60 is better.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, 60 is better than 90.
It certainly
is. Better, I mean, than minute 20.
60, 75. And Colin Morikawa, he was asked a bunch about this in his press conference yesterday at Torrey Pines, as he sort of alluded to there. And players who aren't doing aim point properly, or, you know, just the rhythm of the group doesn't work. Like, you need to be going in there and starting your process while other players are also reading their putts. They don't want you to be stomping around the putting green as well. And so there's certainly a way to speed it up and maybe implement a shot clock if it's 60 to 75. I really think the other methods are better. Mm. Naming and shaming players. There could be potentially some vitriol directed at those players if they're not speeding it up. You know, publicizing the fines that you may have for a player. I think that is a better step than potentially introducing a shot clock or going even so far as to ban this putting method.
Make no mistake, if it was only on social media, it's one thing. But now you've got the likes of Dottie Pepper, Frank Nobolo, Jim Gallagher Jr., pointing it out, having a go at those players. It's crossed the threshold of just being social media whining.
I mean,
now it's getting on linear. It's getting on the national television broadcast.
I mean, they don't want to be out there for 5.5 hours either. I don't particularly blame them. Dottie Pepper's point, I think, was well taken, because it's about respect.
It's about respect
for the fans who are watching on site, for the fans who are watching at home, for the fellow competitors. Yes, something needs to be done. It's unclear the exact direction they can take and what even the intended goal is.
Mm.
you're not going to shave 90 minutes off any sort of pace of play policy.
No.
Making it a little bit quicker, making it a little bit better presentation on TV has certainly has to be a priority.
A story we will continue to follow. We promise you that. Of course, this week's Genesis Invitational, third signature event of the season on the PGA Tour at Torrey Pines. The tournament originally scheduled to be played at Riviera Country Club was moved by the PGA Tour to Torrey South in San Diego because of the Los Angeles wildfires. Now, Kira K. Dixon on site all week out at Torrey Pines and joins us now. Good afternoon, Kira.
Good afternoon, Damon. Well, it's a bit of a cold, miserable, rainy day here at the Genesis Invitational, but that's not going to stop us from having a great day today. The guys are out in their pro-am groups, and they're getting their practice in. I ran into Sahith Thagala earlier, and I asked him if there's a big difference in the setup that he's noticed between when he teed it up at the Farmers Insurance Open a few weeks ago and this week, and he said that the setup is essentially the same, but the rough is about three times thicker. It's giving U.S. Open-like setup, and you add in the rain and the conditions, and it's going to lead to some difficulty trying to get out of that rough. So the setup and the conditions, a big topic of conversation here at the Genesis Invitational.
You know, when you play the U.S. Open here, you have played different pins. They don't have to do a ton to this golf course, just like maintenance-wise, to do a whole lot. Unfortunately, we're going to get a lot of rain, so it will be soft, but that will mean the rough's going to play thicker. So, but yeah, I would like to see different pins and just make it unique. Obviously, when the fans are watching, they just watched this like event in a way a few weeks ago. So it would be great to see something a bit unique. But again, not playing north, I think it opens up a little bit more variety. So for sure, like if I was just sitting at home watching this, I wouldn't want it to look like a carbon copy. But I do think it helps like slightly different field in a way. Like I don't think he did. Yeah, Rory didn't play the Farmer, so I think that's always exciting when you have a superstar come and play the event. So I think that brings some uniqueness, but definitely would like to see a little bit different with the golf course, minus the fact that we just can't make it very firm.
Unfortunately, I couldn't play a couple weeks ago, so it's good to see. I watched obviously a little bit of the Farmers and saw how firm and fast everything was and just assumed the rough was going to be growing out. They definitely did that this week, and with the forecast, the weather, the rain, it's going to play really tough. It's going to play long. It's going to play, you know, where fairways matter a lot. I don't think you can really overpower a golf course this long when the rough is that big. So fairways going to be important. This Torrey Pines is already a very, very difficult golf course, so I look forward to that and just have a challenge in front of us.
Well, Colin Morikawa mentioned those conditions, and the PGA Tour's meteorologist agrees we're going to have some difficult conditions through the next few days. We're expecting quite a bit of rain through Friday. Worst-case scenario, it could be up to 2 inches. Temperatures may be creeping up into those low 60s. We've got gusts of up to 24 miles per hour, so we are looking at some Scottish Lynx-type weather here in Southern California. Should provide quite the test for everyone teeing it up, guys.
Kira, bring your slicks and bring your wellies, at least for the first 2 days. The weekend does look quite nice. Kira, I understand that there was a PAC meeting earlier this week. What are you hearing?
Yes, I do have my wellies, and there have been several PAC meetings, actually, Ryan. There have been different meetings every night based on the various subcommittees of the Player Advisory Council. Many of those players are in the field this week. One of the meetings that I spoke to a player about had to do a lot with competitions, and especially when it came to the format of the Tour Championship. What is that going to look like? How do you make the format of the Tour Championship clearer for the fans? And it's definitely clear in those meetings that they have more discussions to be had. There's a certain way that the players think about that, certain way that the business folks think about that. So they're going to have to work towards a consensus and continuing to make that product better for the broadcast and for the fans. There's going to be another PAC committee meeting tonight on the business side of things for the PGA Tour. So it seems like lots of business around the future of the PGA Tour's product is being conducted at the Genesis Invitational this week.
Kira K. Dixon with all the news and nuggets from a soggy Torrey Pines on this Wednesday. Hopefully the sun does appear this weekend as planned. And how about these meetings, Ryan Lavner? She didn't say one meeting. It's meeting upon meeting upon meeting and subcommittees. And listen, I kind of know where Rory McIlroy was coming from. There's a lot going on in the game right now. Tour Championship, the future of what professional golf looks like, let alone just trying to hit the ball in the fairway this week.
Exactly. If you're a PGA Tour player, you tend to do one thing well, and now you're being sort of asked to expand your level of knowledge. I can understand that. You know, competition is one thing. When you're starting to then deal with geopolitics and other government, it's a whole different thing entirely. It's going to be very interesting to see what does transpire with the Tour Championship and the format discussions. When I was in a conversation at a roundtable with those PGA Tour executives a couple weeks ago, they said, look, if we can all come to some sort of consensus on a format, whether that's incorporating match play, whether it's sort of changing what has been the staggered start format since 2019, this could be implemented as early as August. If it sort of drags on, if, you know, as Kira mentioned, the players want things, want one thing, TV partners, sponsors want something different, then look, yeah, we'll probably punt this to 2026. But the PGA Tour was very optimistic and hopeful that over the next month that they can have some sort of consensus on this and change the format for the Tour Championship.
Those secret sponsors, TV partners want stars. They want them there on the weekend, which is why every time somebody brings up match play,
not a given,
they get a little nervous. What would you like to see this look like? Because I feel like the staggered scoring start is starting to lose whatever momentum that it had early on. You're starting to hear people complain about it. You're starting to see 72-hole scores that aren't the same as those, you know, if you didn't have the starting strokes, for example.
I'm kind of two minds of this. I think if you were determined to make match play, I'd maybe like to see something like the Western Amateur uses, where it's a combination of stroke play, then cutting down into match play. That way you're guaranteed to have the best players who are performing that week. And if you keep the match play bracket small enough, you're almost guaranteeing that you're going to have a very star-studded field. What I would like to see, and this may be completely radical, is blowing up the FedEx Cup playoffs, determining and crowning the FedEx Cup champion after the end of the regular season. Whether that continues to be the Wyndham Championship, maybe you make the FedEx St. Jude Championship the last week of the regular season and determine the FedEx Cup champion that way, then have an entirely different playoff structure and a postseason. What the PGA Tour has always struggled with in this FedEx Cup era is trying to shoehorn two things. The player who played the best all season long, as well as having sort of a compelling final stretch of the season as well. It's really difficult to do two things at once, so I would separate them. Call the regular season winner the FedEx Cup champion and then have this playoff bonanza where you can mess with different formats. You can have a true playoff of top 70, top 50, top 30, then going into East Lake. And so there's a lot of different scenarios, which is why I'm very hard-pressed to believe that they'll have some sort of consensus in the next couple of weeks to make this a reality for 2025.
Maybe a regular season MVP and a Super Bowl MVP. Stay tuned. We'll see what happens. One thing we know, this is the third signature event of the season. So before we get to break, let's show you how you can watch coverage of the Genesis Invitational on Golf Channel Thursday, 4 p.m., Friday, 4 p.m., Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern, then Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern time for that final round.
And still to come, we're catching up with 1995 U.S. Open champion and two-time Genesis Invitational winner Corey Pavin. Golf Today, we'll be back after this. And welcome back into Golf Today. One of the longest-running events on the senior circuit makes its annual appearance on the schedule. This week marks the 38th Chubb Classic, first won by Gary Player all the way back in 1988. Coverage begins Friday at noon Eastern time on Golf Channel. And Corey Pavin is teeing up this week in Naples. Pavin is also a past champion of this week's Genesis Invitational on the PGA Tour. In 1994, Pavin dueled it out with Fred Couples and came out victorious at Riviera for his 11th career PGA Tour victory and his first since the 1992 Honda Classic.
Ryan, in the following year, UCLA's Pavin defended his title at Riv thanks to a final round 67 three-stroke win over Jadon Blake and Kenny Perry for Pavin's 12th career PGA Tour title. That win set up a huge 1995 for Corey. He'd go on to win the United States Open with the help of that four wood from 228 yards, chasing it down the fairway at Shinnecock Hills, finished two shots ahead of Greg Norman for his maiden major title. What a moment, hands in the air. So great to have UCLA's own Corey Pavin joining us on this Wednesday from Naples. It's great to see you, buddy. I always wondered, you went in 94 and 95. What was the pressure as someone who grew up in Oxnard, who went to UCLA to win at Riviera, and so it didn't become so much of an albatross around your neck with the pressure?
Yeah, you know, it was It was nice to win kind of very close to where I grew up. I grew up, you know, Oxnard's about maybe about 45, 50 miles north. But, you know, having gone to UCLA and played there a couple times in college, but not much. But such a wonderful golf course. It's one of the best courses in the country, and just requires every aspect of your game to be going well. And you know, I won it the first time. I was so thrilled to have won there, and to do it back to back is, you know, more than twice as thrilling. So it was very fun.
Corey, along those same lines, when it came to regular PGA Tour stops, how much did the venue matter to you and your peers? Or was it still all about, you know, the invitational status or boosted purses at that time?
You know, Ryan, for me, I always looked at the golf course as my first and foremost thing that I was interested in. If I felt like it was a golf course I could play well on, you know, I'd play all the time there. Purses never really interested me that much. I mean, obviously I want to have the biggest purses we could play for, but you know, the course was the number one factor. And you know, kind of scheduling around family and things like that was important as well, obviously. And just tried to figure it out and try to play courses that I could play well on and compete on as best I could.
Corey, the PGA Tour has changed quite a bit since your heyday, since the height of your power in the mid-1990s. How much do you follow the modern game? Are you optimistic? Are you critical? What do you see when you watch the modern PGA Tour?
You know, I like it. You know, I everybody talks about purse and stuff like that, and you know what we played for back then and what they're playing for now. But you know, I remember when I came out, we played for 500,000 purse was like a big tournament, and then we went up to got up to like 3 million, and I thought it was fantastic. So you know, every year, you know, the athletes make more and more money, and it's fine. So I have no qualms about what they're playing for. You know, I obviously wish I could be playing for that money now too, but you know, to watch the game change and develop, and you know, the equipment and the ball and everything, it's a different game, but it always changes over time. I just wish it hadn't changed as much. The guys are hitting it so far. It's exponentially further than it was going, you know, when I was out on tour. But you know, you have to adapt, you have to play, and that's the way that you can compete out there. You know, I had to do that when the ball changed a lot and equipment started changing, as I had to adapt my game to play the best I could and compete at the highest level I could.
I was just going to say, Corey, this week's PGA Tour stop at Torrey Pines stretches out to 7,800 yards. What do you think when you hear that, and do you think it's gone too far?
Well, I think it's long, but I don't think it's gone too far because the guys are hitting it so far. You know, you look at, you know, whatever Rory's averaging, I don't know if he's number one, but, you know, what's he averaging, 330? I'm not even sure what the numbers are, but, you know, that's a long way. And, you know, that's the only way that, you know, it's not that you protect the game, but, you know, if there's different ways to set up a golf course to make it difficult. And you can look at a course like Harbortown. The scores haven't changed much over the years. Because of the course setup, the way it's set up and the way it plays. Length is not definitely the answer, but it is an answer. You know, growing rough up, making the greens firm, putting pins in pretty hard places, hole locations is ways to protect scoring. And it could be done that way as well. I'd rather see it being done with course setup than with lengthening the courses. It's kind of hard to, even for me, to relate to these guys is hard. You know, I can't imagine what the average person at home is thinking. You know, just watching AT&T and Rory pounding it over the trees on 14 and hitting 7 irons and 6 irons into 14, it's like mind-boggling to me. I mean, I'm just jealous, I suppose, but I wish I could do it. But you know, it has to be done. You know, rough is a big factor, narrowing fairways. You could do that to protect it, and you don't have to lengthen all the courses, but I understand why they're getting longer. The guys are hitting it, you know, 40 yards further than when I was out on tour.
Corey, one thing we don't see much anymore is players hitting a 4-wood from 228 yards into a par 4 like you did at Shinnecock Hills on that Sunday. The shot was incredible, but there was a moment there after you struck the shot, and we're going to show it once again, one of my favorite shots. Amazing to think that this was 30 years ago. You chased the ball down the fairway and you put your arms in the air, but then the camera kind of followed you as you dropped to your knees and you closed your eyes and kind of had a quiet moment just to yourself. I'm just curious, what was going through your mind those few seconds that you kind of had to yourself to reflect on what you were about to accomplish?
Yeah, you know, all day I was pretty calm and relaxed, and the last three holes were a little nervy for me. And that was the first time I really showed emotion, was running up to watch the shot. And I just tried to calm myself down. You know, I just said a little prayer, and I just said, you know, whatever happens, happens. You know, it was just, you know, I'll accept it. You know, I realized I should have prayed that I should have made the putt. It would have been a better prayer. But you know, I was just trying to, like, calm myself back down. Because, as I said, that was the first time I really showed emotion that day. I was trying to be very calm and very within myself. I knew how important that shot was. So, yeah, that was kind of what I was thinking at that point. It was a really fun walk up to the 18th green, one that I'll never forget. And, you know, I've been waiting a long time to win a major, and it was pretty cool that it was US Open, and it was very cool that it was at Shinnecock.
Corey, you always had this perception as the gritty little grinder. Did that ever bother you, sort of the insinuation that maybe your skills weren't commensurate with some of your peers?
You know, it's a funny thing. You know, to me, you know, I just try to get everything I could get out of my game. You know, as we were kind of alluding to earlier, I'm not the longest hitter in the world. I have to figure out a way to get the ball in the hole as fast as I can. So I always took it as a compliment, you know, like a bulldog, you know, that kind of thing. Just tenacity, you know, I never gave up. I tried every way I could to figure out how to get the ball in the hole. Sometimes I did it, sometimes I didn't, but I think it's a great moniker I'm proud of. It just means I'm super competitive and I never give up. And I mean, I don't know how an athlete would not like that kind of a moniker.
Corey, speaking of not giving up, we have a video of you back in 2012 at the Allianz with a basically an impossible shot you pulled off left-handed. Mark Calcavecchia, who we spoke to yesterday, said it was the greatest shot he ever saw. He was in the group. You got up and down. You ended up winning the Allianz. In big picture, a 15-time winner on the PGA Tour, a major champ, three Ryder Cups, Ryder Cup captain, a couple of President's Cups. Can I make a case that Corey Pavin belongs in the World Golf Hall of Fame?
Well, I'd be glad to be in it. If you want to vote for me, I'll accept your vote. You know, I would love to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, whether I get in it or not, you know, obviously I would like to, but it doesn't change anything I've ever done. And I'm really proud of my career. Would I love to have that tagged on to the end of my name? Sure, of course. You know, who wouldn't? But we'll see. You know, I was up once a few years ago and didn't quite make it. But, you know, hopefully I'll get back in there. And, you know, I'd be honored to be in the Hall of Fame.
Corey, it's a Ryder Cup year. Would you agree with Roy McIlroy's assessment that there is nothing harder to do in the world of golf right now than win an away Ryder Cup?
Yeah, I agree with that, Ryan. I mean, I think that's the pattern has shown in the last, I don't know what it's the last four or five Ryder Cups. It's very hard to win on the road. Obviously, the last time the U.S. has won was 93. We've been close a lot. We've lost by a point, you know, quite a few times. But it's hard, you know, it's... obviously, you know, home court advantage is basically in play, and it's worth, you know, probably a point, maybe 2 points. So that's what makes it difficult. You know, you have your home crowd, you're in your home country, you're eating your own food, whatever it may be. You know, certainly you have your fans on your side when you're playing in your own country. And all those things add up to some benefit for sure.
Corey, been a long time since we chatted. It's great to catch up with you. Thank you for your time, and have a great week in Naples. We appreciate it.
Thanks. I'd just like to send a wishes and prayers to everybody in the Palisades. You know, I lived there for 10 years in that area, and my daughter went to school in the Palisades, and we have a lot of friends that lost their homes there. And just thinking about all them and you know, with the tournament moving down there, I think it's the right move, but I'm thinking about all the people in the Palisades.
No, thank you for your thoughts, and great to hear that the Genesis is doing a lot to help the people in Los Angeles in the wake of those wildfires. This is Corey Pavin. This is Golf Today. We're back after this.
And just a reminder, the PGA Tour heads to Torrey Pines South this week for the Genesis Invitational. Coverage begins Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. And just a few weeks ago, the golf course played host to the Farmers Insurance Open, whose Andrew Novak put together a great performance finishing the week in solo third at Torrey Pines, thanks in part to putts like this in the fifth hole in the final round. That was from 54 feet for birdie. And we're pleased to welcome in now Andrew Novak to the show. Andrew, appreciate you joining us. Just 3 weeks later, has there been much of a difference between what you're seeing for the Farmers Insurance Open and what you're seeing now for the Genesis Invitational?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I am currently standing by the lodge. I can barely see the first green. I cannot see any of the ocean. So this mist, this weather, yeah, it's a little bit different.
Being said, is there anything you can take from a few weeks ago in terms of your yardage book or notes, or does that go out the window because the weather is so different than it was a few weeks ago?
Yeah, the Sharpie I had in the top that said, please hit every fairway, is now highlighted. keep it in the short stuff and hit the greens, because the rough, it's going to be extra nasty this week.
Andrew, for a player who hasn't yet won on the PGA Tour, how do you describe the feelings and the emotions of being in the hunt as you were a couple weeks ago at the Farmers?
You know, I've been in the hunt a couple times recently now, and I think I get a little more comfortable each time. So if I can just keep putting myself in those positions, I truly believe I will come through at some point in time. Just, you know, the guys I've played against, Rafa and Harris, that have won the two tournaments, they've played great. They really, no slip-ups, a lot of great shots coming down the stretch. They just didn't really give an inch. So I think it's just about putting myself in those positions and just being more comfortable each time I get there.
Well, the better you play, the more people want to talk to you. And you did a great walk and talk on CBS at Pebble Beach. What prompted you to give up your time in the middle of the round? Why'd you want to do it?
Yeah, it's something that, from what I've seen on social media, the fans seem to like. And I don't find it a difficult thing to do. On Korn Ferry Tour, I did do mic'd up. Like, basically, while they were on coverage, I was mic'd up, and they had audio from that. So it's not anything too crazy, anything outside of something I've done similarly. And if it adds something for the fans, I'm happy to do it. I completely agree with the email that kind of Justin Thomas had sent to the players. Was a couple weeks before that. And I think that if we can kind of do our part to try and improve the product for the fans, that'll help.
Andrew, pace of play has been an issue on the PGA Tour for eons, but it seemed to reach a boiling point once again at the Farmers, where you were in the hunt there. Did it feel to you in the moment like a problem? And what could have been done that week to speed it up, if anything?
Yeah, pace of play is definitely an issue. Like, again, if it was an easy fix, they would have done it 20, 30 years ago when it started being an issue. It's been an issue for a while. I think at Farmers, obviously pace was brutal. Like, it took maybe 5.5 hours for the last group. But at Farmers, I don't really know what they could have done. It was, I think the stroke average that day was about 75 for the field. I mean, that's probably 4 shots more than what PGA Tour average would be. That's 4 shots per guy. We had 70 guys in the field. That's 280 extra shots being hit that day. You have long rough. You have guys laying up, having to get extra numbers. You're on a course where, if you're hitting par putts, you're not tapping in. You're more likely marking. You have three, four feet. Like, you're not tapping those in, especially not on these greens. So I think it was kind of a perfect storm of just brutal conditions in this golf course. I don't think there was going to be a way to really play it super fast. I think going forward, like, there are steps guys can take to speed up their processes. But on a course like this, in those conditions, I think it just is going to kind of be slow when it's playing that tough.
You know, football has a play clock. Tennis has a serve clock. Baseball has a pitch clock. Does the PGA Tour need a shot clock? Should there be volunteers with big, you know, Flava Flav clocks hanging around their neck showing you guys what time it is?
Yeah, I think a shot clock in theory is good. It would help. You could hang it behind the green or something on the TV tower maybe. But again, like, that probably works this week when we have a ton of volunteers. There's less guys. We have the infrastructure for it. But if you do it this week, you also have to do it in weeks like Puerto Rico or Dominican, where there's, you know, less volunteers, less built-up infrastructure for the tournaments. And I just don't know how you can reliably do that at smaller events. So I think it is a great idea in practice, but, like, I'm not entirely sure how you could fully implement it every single tournament and have it running well to get that done.
Andrew, you've had such a nice start to the 2025 season. When you have a close call like you did at the Farmers, what's your self-evaluation process like? Are you looking at stats? Are you consulting with your caddy and the rest of your team? Are you examining your mental processes? What is that process like for you individually?
Yeah, I think obviously there's some analysis to be taken from it. I'm always kind of looking back at things that maybe I could have done better, where I could improve. I've really kind of prided myself on improving basically every step of the way with my career, starting McKenzie Tour up through Korn Ferry Tour, just getting better each and every year. On the PGA Tour, I've improved every year. And I think that level of progression has been big for me. Like, I know I'm not making massive, huge gains, but I think it was Scotty that said, if you can do 1% better every day, I mean, that adds up. And it's kind of same thing for me. You know, I did a lot of good things. I played fantastic here for the Farmers. I really played great. I came up with 2 shots short. So where can I find those 2 shots? What could I have improved on? What can I do differently next time when I'm in that situation? I think that all kind of adds up to just my comfort level next time I'm in the situation. I think I'm going to be able to kind of look back on that experience and take some things from it and put that to good use next time I have a chance to win.
Andrew, speaking of massive, I remember meeting you last year at the Mexico Open, thinking to myself, this is a big dude. And then I read that you want to be a football coach when you're done playing golf. Like, what do you have in mind? Like, peewees, high school, college, pros? You know, what's your level of love with football?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got to start somewhere. So I probably will be starting smaller. I don't think I have really too much will to do the college. It's the recruiting, the travel. I've done all my travel on this tour. Post-golf, I think I'm going to be happy settling down somewhere. So I think high school level would be great. Getting to work with kids, it's still, you know, competitive level of football. I think it would be something that would be a lot of fun to do.
As an assistant coach on a 6-and-under Pee Wee Football League, I'm not sure you want that life, Andrew. I am curious. This is your fourth full year now on the PGA Tour. Are there still parts of this job that are uncomfortable for you at this point?
Uncomfortable? Not really. I think getting to, like, new courses that I haven't played yet is, you know, this is my fourth year. Most of the courses I've played, I've seen. So say we were playing like Riviera this week. It's been a little while since I've had to do like a full proper scouting week. So I guess I'm maybe a little rusty on something like that. But obviously I'm comfortable on this course. I've seen this course plenty. So I think for the most part, I've kind of got my routines down. I know most of the courses. I know what my goals are for the week. I know how my early week prep goes. I know how my pre-round prep goes before tournament rounds. At this point, it is kind of free. It's kind of freeing because I just know it's about going out there and executing my plan and playing my game.
Well, that preparation is yielding some terrific results for you in 2025. We appreciate a few minutes and best luck this week at the Genesis.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on golf today, let's get an update on the LPGA. On Sunday, 23-year-old Yalimi Noh broke through at the Founders Cup for her first career LPGA win. Bogey-free 68 in the final round. Final score 263, set a 72-hole scoring record at Bradenton Country Club. And we're joined by the champ herself, Yalimi Noh. Congratulations. You know, you said in your post-round press conference that you felt going into 2025 that this was going to be your year. What gave you that kind of confidence and belief?
Yeah, I think my preparation in the off season. Oh, thank you as well. And some of my good results towards the end of the last season helped me really gain that confidence back. And I was just super excited for the year to start and to keep that rhythm going. So I was like, this is going to be my year. I really want to get a win. And to get it done on the first week was incredible.
The switch to the long putter, a lot was made of it during the broadcast. And, you know, before it became popularized, a lot of people viewed it as sort of a last resort or a crutch. Did you have any issue with, like, the perception of it? And did it take you a while before you were sort of a believer in that sort of method?
Yeah, I mean, it really was my last crutch. I mean, summer of 2023, I was really struggling with my putting. could almost call it the yips with the short putts. And I was really, really struggling. I tried different putters, different grips, everything. But my coach and my dad suggested the broomstick. And I was like, I've never like used this. I don't even know how to use it. I never saw much of it except Adam Scott. But when I started it, it was just a completely different feel for me and got rid of all my mental thoughts, bad thoughts over the ball. And it really, really helped. And it's been about a year and a half since I've used it. And it's been great. I think it's actually better than when I was putting the best with my short putter.
What was the process of comfort where you felt ready to go from maybe practicing at home, maybe doing some money games with your pals, to maybe doing it at a pro-am, you know, where you felt really comfortable to break it out, and not only just to break it out, but that you were doing it and putting the way you wanted to?
Yeah, honestly, though, at that time, I was like, anything. I just need something to get me into a new feel, anything to help me just putt normal and not be so tense over the ball. So I was like, I'm using it right away. I actually, my coach made me like a makeshift broomstick. What he just like lengthened his bullseye putter, and I just tried it. It was like 41 inches, not even a real broomstick, just a long putter. And I was doing the broomstick stroke, and I was like, this is so much better than what I'm already doing. I don't care. I'm using it next week. And that's it.
Believe me, you're still young, but you've actually been an LPGA veteran at this point. I'm curious, what was the hardest part for you of turning pro at the age of 17?
The hardest part was really, I mean, when I first turned pro, it was so exciting and everything was new. Everything was just fresh. And I was having a lot of fun with it. And I had early success in my career. And I think the hardest part has been really organizing my schedule. I mean, golf is so much physically and mentally, and the weeks on the road really gets to you before you even notice it. So really just having a good schedule, having a good team around me, it's all been a process, but it's still learning too.
Well, I went to UCLA. You probably know if you watch the show, you considered going to UCLA and not turning pro. How close was the decision? Was it a coin flip? Was it 50-50? What were the factors that told you, no, I'm ready to be a professional?
Yeah, I think the end of my junior career, I had a great year, and it really gave me a lot of confidence. But, you know, pro life is different, and I couldn't have done it without the support of my parents. They really surprisingly pushed me to turn pro and not go to college. I guess their belief in me has gotten me this far. And yeah, I mean, I still think about what would have happened if I went to college, but I'm very happy with where I am now and no regrets.
Those first 3 or 4 years as a professional, did you struggle at all with expectations or patience? And was there sort of a turning point to get past that, to where you could start to enjoy the fruits of your success?
Yeah, I think, I mean, up until last week, it has been a while. It's been my sixth year on tour, and I really thought that the first few years when I got into contention that I could get it done and that it would be my time. But every year passed, and I wasn't able to get a win, but I think that everything happens for a reason, and this timing right now has been perfect for me. I've learned so much from my struggles, all my past experiences from being in contention, and then, I mean, even losing my card back in 2023. It's been a long journey, but I mean, I feel like I'm just getting started, and with all those experiences and good parts and the bad parts are where it led me to now.
Well, speaking of timing, one of the big issues in the game, of course, is pace of play. The LPGA adopting a new policy that will begin during the Ford Championship in March. It was something you faced earlier in your career. Where are you with the big discussion on pace of play? And has your own pace of play maybe changed compared to when you first turned professional?
Yeah, I did have some issues back in the day. I actually did not. I've never been like a really, really slow player. Back when I got that fine in my rookie year, I think that was mainly experience. Like a lot of players have said, you know, with the pace of play, some players, you know, we all know who the slow ones are. And some people kind of play around the system. And at the time I was a rookie, I didn't really know what to do. I didn't defend myself. And I unfortunately got that fine, but I think it's an amazing direction that the LPGA is going towards. I mean, even last week we played the final round in 3 hours and 50 minutes or something. And it's incredible. I mean, that's the way it should be. And with those new rules coming into effect in March, I think there's only an upward roll from here. It's been great.
Did you think previously, even back in 2021, when you had your own infraction, that the LPGA has a pace of play problem? Or is this something that sort of cropped up over the past year?
I didn't think that there was a problem back then. And even now, I mean, it's tough because everyone is, you know, we're all trying to do our best out there, and pace of play can be an issue, but it really depends on the week and, you know, the how the players are that time. But I don't think it's not the biggest problem, but it's definitely something that we can work on. And as a tour and as players, we're taking a lot more accountability into not only being faster ourselves, but really trying to get our group to go faster. It's not just, oh, I'm going to go fast and try to make my, or whatever my, the rest of my group is doing. Now I feel like we're all going to take more accountability and be like, hey, let's all move faster. And it's only better. I mean, no one wants to be on the clock. So I think it's a good direction we're going in.
Eliemi, as we reflect on win number one on the LPGA, you gave a lot of credit to your parents. You got very emotional. To be a junior athlete requires a lot of family sacrifice. Take us back to those AJGA days where you were such a dominant player, and the sacrifices specifically that your parents made in terms of practices and tournaments, et cetera.
Yeah, my parents have been with me every step of the way. They've been my biggest supporters from day one, and yeah, junior golf was a lot. I mean, we had to travel across the country for tournaments, and my parents were always there with me, supporting me. And even when I turned pro, those first few years was really tough because I didn't have my card when I first turned pro. And they were there every single week, every single day. Still to this day, they don't miss a tournament, and they're always there. My dad watches my swing. He's my part-time coach, as we call him, from my actual coach, but he's there every week. And my mom's always trying to make me home cook meals throughout the week. So we're always in a house, and she's cooking food for me every morning, and just always there through the ups and the downs, and still going on.
Yeah, I'm my kid's part-time tennis coach, even though they don't want me to be. Eliemi, it's great to visit with you. Congratulations. This is win number one. I imagine we'll speak to you again sometime down the road. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Keep it locked right here on Golf Today. Rory McIlroy just spoke to the media, Torrey Pines, and had some interesting thoughts on LIV Golf. And Jay Monahan, commissioner of the PGA Tour, scrumming with reporters right now. Plenty more to get into right after this short break.